Psalm 91, the subject that I want to look at this morning, entitled Joy and Tribulation, and kind of a overall theme of the weekend has been to find joy in our relationship with our wife and husband, joy in our marriage, and then also going to be sharing a bit about our story this morning. Psalm 91, familiar passage here. In fact, I don't know how many plaques I have seen in people's living rooms in their house of Psalm 91. Almost probably second only to Psalm 23. And there's so much in this psalm, but I'd like to just kind of look at this for a few moments as we as I move into this message this morning. Excuse me. Verse 1, he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in him will I trust. Surely he shall deliver thee from the snare of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. He shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust. His truth shall be thy shield and buckler. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, nor for the arrow that flieth by day, nor for the pestilence that walketh in darkness, nor for the destruction that wasteth at noonday. 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand, but it shall not come nigh thee. Only that with thine eyes shalt thou behold and see the reward of the wicked. Because thou hast made the Lord, which is my refuge, even the Most High, thy habitation. There shall no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh thy dwelling. For he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. They shall bear thee up in their hands, lest thou dash thy foot against a stone. Thou shalt tread upon the lion, the adder, the young lion, and the dragon shalt thou trample under feet. Excuse me. Because he has set his love upon me, therefore will I deliver him. I will set him on high, because he hath known my name. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. As I look at this passage this morning, this psalm, there's a lot of key points that I could touch on. I'm just going to look at a few here. Verse 1, notice what it says about dwelling under the shadow of the Almighty. And in this psalm, God is seen as a fortress, as a shield, you know, as a protection, you know, kind of giving the word picture in this passage about like you're out in a bad storm. And now in the Midwest, we get some storms. We get a lot of winds. And I've already said it gets windy out there just because it can. And but sometimes there's more intensity with it. And I think a lot of our buildings that have been built over the years out there, in the last, especially the last 20 years, there's been a lot of adjustment to the structure simply because of, it seems there's more straight line winds and things than there used to be. And so to try to prevent building tragedy, you know, they're built better today. And the Almighty provides a shadow, he provides a protection, a fortress, a refuge when the winds of life blow toward us. And here God is referred to as the Most High and the Almighty. We know that, we understand that, we get that. Like we heard a few minutes ago, God can do what he wants to do. Anything. There's no limitation. He gives us grace to do about so much. And I believe as we experience gentleness and humility and brokenness, that possibility of reaching out and doing things for people increases. Yes, it does. I was so blessed this morning on that thought of the smaller we're allowed, that we allow God to break us. We become more effective. You know, we want to conquer as men. We want to be big. That is so true. Thank you for that challenge. Verse 2, he is my refuge and my fortress, giving us a picture of a safe place from a storm when the winds are blowing and it just doesn't feel safe. Verse 4, it gives that word picture of a chicken providing warmth and protection for her chicks. I don't know how many of you are farm connected enough that you've seen a hen with a whole brood of little chicks. Last summer, we had two ducks that kind of went out of their way, and between the two of them, they hatched 19 little ducklings. And most beautiful thing to watch. That's something in my throat here this morning that's giving me a little hassle. But you know, as I see the, you know, all they have to do is make a little bit of a sound, and them little ducklings will just go right underneath those wings. You know, God is that to us. Yes, he is. And I know at down at the entrance this morning, I met two of the young couples here. And I just said, you know, I want you couples to leave this place this weekend, not in discouragement of all the unforeseen things that you may face in your future. You know, we live in a broken world, and the encouragement I just gave them was that, you know, singles face difficulties. Everyone alive faces difficulties because we're in a sinful, broken world. But when you have a companion to walk with you through this, it is so powerful. And so I, for one, advocate walking this journey with someone that is dear to your heart. And yet at the same time, God is the refuge that is watching over us and helping us. You know, just like this chicken or this duck, this long little brood. You know, I'm a little protective of the ducks at home. I always kind of put them in a smaller place or inside a building till them little ducklings are older, because there's varmints around. And for some reason, it just seems like when you let them to themselves, there may be 8 or 9 today, and there may only be 7 tomorrow, and you never know what happened to the other one. They kind of disappear. And the same way God wants to keep us covered under his feathers. It says, under his wings will I trust. Again in verse 9, God is our refuge, our habitation. We cannot do this alone. No, we can't without his protection. And then verse 11 and 12, it's like he deploys angels to watch over us and to carry us, to minister to us during times that may be a little bit tough. Verse 15, it says, I will be with him in trouble. It's a promise that is still effective for us today in 2026. Yes, it is. It is still effective, regardless where we are, where you are in your journey today. There's a lot of stories that could be told in this audience this morning. Every one of you has a story. And what I want to share this morning, a bit of our story, and it may be a little bit of overlap to what my dear wife shared with you sisters yesterday. I am not advocating at all that our story is better than yours, because it's not. Some of you have a story that I wish we could all hear. But life develops into a story. What is your story today? Every one of us has one. A story that very likely, whether you are married 10 years, 20, 30, or 45, or 46, like we are, probably does not entail all the details that we were envisioning when we stood here at the altar and said, I do, I am, I will. Thank you, Lynn, for the way you brought that out last night in our vows. You know, we have ambitions, we have goals, we have visions. My goal in this message this morning is to see a realistic picture of the world we're living in, and yet at the same time, the God that we serve as a refuge, that will walk with us. You know, to see a realistic picture of marriage, a lasting soulmate relationship, that most generally, the depth of that relationship, and may I say, God's ability of brokenness a lot of times, is a result of walking through some waters that sometimes they feel like they come up over our head, or some hot fire. And again, I want to say, some of you could share your story just as well as I could this morning. I don't know where you are today. I've heard it said one time, this almost sounds discouraging, but you know, either someone has just come through something difficult, or they're in the middle of it, or they're just ready to face it. Sounds really encouraging, doesn't it? But this is real life. We're in a broken world. But you know, that doesn't have to define our destiny at all. No, it doesn't. Because God is good. Yes, He is. He's good when life doesn't feel good. Ultimately, this morning, I want this story to bring honor and glory to God. This is not just about us. He's been faithful. He's walked with us through some deep waters. He's carried us through the storm. You know, these straight line, 100 mile per hour winds that want to take everything down on their path. He's carried us through those things. He spared us as we walked through the fire. Health failures or not knowing how our bills would be paid, or infertility, and the list goes on. Some of you are right in those shoes today. You understand what I'm saying. If you've been married more than a month, you will agree, a few of you, 6 months. If you've been married more than a month, you will agree that real, may I say, that the honeymoon is not the reality of long-term marriage. You know, maybe we wish we could just stay in that honeymoon, but you know, most of us came back home. We did. And like the saying goes, the rubber meets the road. Life, real life sets in. And I would do every bit of it again if it was with her. God's promises to the Israelites in Isaiah 43 is still true today. And I'm not going to turn to that. I'm just going to, I've got scripts of it jotted down here. That promise is for you and I today. When you pass through the water, I will be with you. Through the rivers, they shall not overflow you. When you walk through the fire, thou shalt not be burned, for I am the Lord thy God. That same Lord that led us for the last 46 years is here for you young couples today. And He will be here forever. As long as He gives us time and breath, He will walk with you. My wife and I's story begins back in 1974. And even though there was not a relationship started at that time, but I, as a result of my older brother and her older sister serving in VS there in Michigan at the same place, our family went in to see my brother, and her sister told my brother that she has a brother my age, and that, you know, Dilmer can stay at our place. She didn't mention that she also has a sister. And I was 17 at the time. She was 15. I would have to lie to say I did not notice her, but yet I just tried to kind of pass that off. And that was kind of the very early part of us, first time we ever seen each other that we know of. Anyway, 1 year later, we have youth fellowship meetings in the Beachy constituency every year. And this is back in our young days, that was a highlight. We didn't go to volleyball tournaments and do all kinds of reunion travels and stuff. We pretty much stayed put. But this was one thing you didn't want to miss. 1 year later, went to the youth fellowship meetings in Illinois, and I was kind of thinking maybe she's going to be there. By then, she's 16. But I couldn't find her. She wasn't there. She stayed home that year, and that was okay. 1 year later, they were in Kelowna at our home community. And out of about 700 or 800 youth, it didn't take me very long to find her. She was there. And I think either that first evening or the second evening, my cousin and I got the nerve up to ask two of these Indiana girls for a date. And Kay, I don't know if I should say this or not. I'm sorry. These were the two girls right here. My cousin's ambition kind of fizzled out then later. That's why Linford is here. God bless him. It's okay. I don't know if I was going to say that or not. But anyway, yes, these two girls have been very good friends. They've just kind of stuck together. But anyway, we had our first date then. She was still in high school. And I knew I'd have to wait a while. I was a bit older than her, 2 years. And that fall, the two of us went to Indiana to see these girls. I think that was kind of the last contact that Kay had with my cousin. And that's, be that as it may. Linford, I'm glad that one didn't last. There you go. Anyway, we were together that fall. We had a good weekend. At least Carolyn and I did. And yet I realized this is a young girl. I'm gonna need some patience. And we kind of let things lay. It was almost like I got the feel from her, stick around for me, but give me some room. Give me some time. And so I waited about a number of months there until the next spring I contacted her again. And I had a way of getting out there to see her, and she was open to that. It's kind of a long winter because I knew there were two other guys in northern Indiana that kind of liked her. And here I was 6 hours away. I kind of felt a little bit handicapped. And it's like, I don't want this girl to get away from me. By June or July, through some contact we had again, I went out to see her again, and she agreed for our relationship to continue. But it was still kind of like, give me some time. Don't move this thing too fast. And I was very much okay to do that. I just wanted to keep her on the string. Didn't want to let go. And our relationship did not move fast. It was limited to a trip to Indiana once in a while. And every Saturday night, you know, I could grab that old phone off of the wall that had this long 20-foot cord, you know. And I would pull that thing as far as I could into a closet so nobody else would hear what we were saying. That was our communication. There were no cell phones. It was, texting. If somebody would have mentioned the word text that day, I'd have said, what are you talking about? You know, it wasn't. So 6 hours apart, our relationship didn't have to move real fast. And it probably was good that it did not. And so we wrote letters. I get pretty good at writing. One week we decided to write a letter every day. And never did that since. But anyway, so 1 year later, by the time we were 21 or 19, also at a youth fellowship meetings, I asked her to become my wife. And obviously she said yes. You can see that today. But because of some stipulations from her father, I knew the wedding is not going to be anytime soon. And those were some kind of long months for me. We were engaged for 13 months. There were times in that 13-month period we didn't see each other for 2 months at a time. I chose to do that just simply to try to get my mind off of how slow the calendar was moving. And it did eventually move. Today it moves about 20 times faster. But anyway, and so finally on September 22nd, 1979, after a little over 3 years, I was able to walk away from that wedding ceremony and know this woman is mine for life. I don't have to go back home. When I go back home, she goes with me. And we went to Niagara Falls for our honeymoon. We had a great time, but we came back home. And this was now early October. I'm a farmer. My dad was harvesting soybeans when I got home. And it seems like I kind of hit the ground running. We came back to the old farmhouse that that I had actually lived in as a little boy years earlier, one of my dad's farms. Worked for my dad, pigs, corn, soybeans, and this was my life. This is all I often said. I grew up in a pig pen. That was my job every day. I just, you know, we didn't think about them stinking. They were the very critters that paid for my dad's farms, you know. And this was coming through the 60s and the 70s. We were now at the very end of the 70s, and within a few months, my wife got a job at our local sale barn at lunchroom as a server, as a waitress, and then she also was a cook there soon for the one sale day. And within a few months, my wife and I talked about, you know, having children. Do you know, a number of years went by. Got ahead of myself just a little bit here. We just came through probably two of the most lucrative farming years that my dad ever experienced. And I just assumed that the 80s and the 90s and following is just going to be the same. I'm just going to follow his steps, do the same thing he did. And did not quite realize that within about 3 years, there would be a crash in the farming economy, some effects that would follow us for a lot of years. These young guys today are fussing at 8% interest. We paid 18. Some people paid up to 20. This was not on a credit card. This is at the bank. I saw my dad struggle like I never imagined I would see him struggle. We had both just bought some ground. In 2 years' time, the value of that ground was about 50% of what we paid for it. Had a pretty ugly looking financial statement for a while. Didn't look very good. Now, I want you to know this morning, anything I say here, I had her with me all the way through this. And that's the reason that I was able to make it through some of these times. We started picking up side jobs to survive. We took on some chicken vaccinating, which was a dirty, ugly job. My wife and I would spend days in these great, big, long chicken houses that you couldn't see the other end when you were in the inside. And we made decent money for that time. Every dollar made a difference, just to try to survive. My dad was in the situation all of a sudden that he could barely pay me much. And so I reached out. She was working at the sale barn lunchroom. We picked up some cleaning jobs. I did some trapping, something that I did since I was 11 years old, and I still do. Furs were high. Every dollar made a difference in that time. It was just like we stretched every dollar bill as far as it would go. I'm going to shift gears here a little bit. Coming back to our first year in marriage. It wasn't very long until we were talking about having children. And I'm just going to expose a little bit here. We grew up in an era, a lot of our peers, our friends, even in some of our beachy churches, but not exclusively. The thing was back then to have only two children. And you know, you get married, you wait about 4 years and you have one, then you give it a good sizable gap, then you have another one. That was, I don't know how else to say, it was kind of the cool thing to do back then. I have friends and peers today that regret following that pattern. And I see a family of 6, 7, 8, 10 children today. I just love to see it. But you know, that first year, we didn't buy that thing. We didn't buy that idea. But we wanted children. And we tried, you know? Month after month of disappointment. Some of you here know exactly what I'm saying. You know, God had other plans. After a number of years of having our hopes dashed every month. You know, we started thinking some other things. We, you know, adoption, fostering went through our minds, and yet I'm not sure if we'd have ever got to that point without the heart cry of my wife. 6-7 years into our marriage, we went to Phoenix, Arizona for the winter. We decided we're going to do one thing that couples with little babies can't do. We went down there. We both got jobs. We had a great winter. I think it was some of the foundation of what we have today. And by then, a lot of our friends were we had friends that were, you know, having the first and second baby already, or maybe the third. And not all couples bought that idea back then of only two children. Anyway, we came home, and my dad was told that they're never going to come back if they go to Phoenix. You're going to lose them. But we came back home. And came back and working with Dad again. And in 1987 to 1990, in about 3.5 years' time, we had our first three little boys come into our home. This was now after we were married almost 10 years, 8 years, I guess it was. And we had three little boys come into our home in that time frame, and I went through two ordinations. Now I was 33 years old. I was a bishop of the church, and we were so free. We could just do anything we wanted to do, and all of a sudden, there was a bit of a culture shock for us. Things changed a lot. You know, over the course of time, we had about 15 foster children. We were able to adopt four of those, two boys and two girls. I still remember we had the two boys, and you know, our adoptions were complete on the two boys, you know, and for me, I was okay. My wife wanted some girls. And am I ever glad that she said, let's not quit here. And so we ended up adopting two girls as well. I saw my wife's heart pour into those children. It was the most healing balm for our infertility. That motherhood, I knew it was in her. It's still in her today. Today, the 9 grandchildren are recipients of that. We would not have them if I wouldn't have said, okay, let's try it. I was kind of apprehensive. You hear things about adoption. I'm going to say, if we had it all to do over, we'd go right back and we would do it again. Adoption, our children didn't always make us look very good. Today, I wouldn't trade them for anything. I want you to know that. Going back to 1993, is when our first daughter came to us. There was something different about a little girl. I think she won my heart really, really quick. She was physically abused.
No.
Wasn't she? I'm sorry. It was emotionally. I'm sorry. You're right. Thanks. Yes, she was very emotionally neglected and abused. And she almost didn't cry much, did she? Well, my wife stayed on her very much and to help try to draw that out of her. And I just didn't know that a little baby girl could be so precious. But 1993 was also a very painful year. It was the summer of my first back surgery, result of a fall when I was young. Also a very painful summer. It was a year that it almost did nothing but rain the entire year. And that's why it's called I Was Lost Summer. 1 year later, I got a job off the farm in an effort to survive. I still had all my chores. It's too stubborn to let anything go. I just figured it was short term. I can do this for a year. I'm young, 37 years old. Burned the candle on both ends. I hope none of you men are doing that today. 15 to 18 hours a day. I was invincible. or so I thought. In 98, 4 years later, I had my second back surgery, another 3 months off of work. Also had a double hernia surgery that summer, something that was already kicked down the road probably 2 or 3 years. I said I may as well be healing at the same time. My schedule was not kind to me. At the end of 98, there was a hog market. The hog market hit a historic low. I had old timers come to me and say, this is worse relationally to what a dollar's worth. This is worse than what the Depression was back in the 30s. It took us a long time to dig out of that hole. In spite of my job, our financial status did not improve. It only got worse. It seemed like everything that worked and clicked for my dad did not work for me. What's the difference? I mean, I just expected it's going to go on the same, but it did not. Twice we sold some land to survive. You know, year 2000 came along, came and went without all the big Y2K threats, and the electricity didn't go off, the electronics didn't all shut down and die like they thought. Everything was kind of, life went on. Kind of thought that probably most of the tough things are behind us. I think I was 43 years old, the year 2000. But then in 2004, I had my third back surgery, probably the most difficult and painful one, but the most successful one. I have been back pain free for the last almost 20 years. I never expected I'd ever see that. But then in 2008, kind of the big heartbreak came when one of our sons took us on a painful journey. It's a journey of sleepless nights and countless criticism and jabs, being told that I don't know how to be a dad. I'm not doing what I should be doing. He needs to be kicked out. You know, and our heart was crying out to our son, knowing that he already went through I don't know how many rejections as an adopted child. We just could not do it. It was a journey that came very close to terminating my ministry. I stepped out from the team through some advice from a few that were mentoring me. Our son that took us on this journey was 4 years old when I left the farm and started working 15 and 18 hours a day. He was like in my shadow. And as I look back, is there something I could have done different? And I'm going to refer to that a little bit later on toward the end of the message here. This dark journey lasted about 3 or 4 years. It was a journey of some emotional pain, struggle, soul searching, trying to find out who I am. I mean, it's, Lord, there's got to be something in this for me. What am I doing wrong? What have I done wrong? Granted, we can't go back. We can't turn the clock back. We can do it physically. It's just not going to help anything. It's still going to be the time it is. And we went for counseling. We went to SMBI for a couple terms there. No, I was not teaching. I was the old man in the class. I went there to learn. I was there to find God, find what I needed to do. What does this have to do with joyful marriages this morning? I want to believe that this whole thing at least did something to me. What I want to say next is to the glory of God. Carolyn and I never, never, ever one time blamed each other for any of this. Never one time. She believed in me even when it felt like no one else did. And me, for sure, could not see any reason in myself to believe in me. But she did. Our trust in each other never wavered. The vision and the passion that I had as a young man, the future goals that I wanted to accomplish after having watched my dad succeed, all those things that I had as a young man have probably all either been completely shattered or altered. But today I want to say I'm okay with that. There's one passion that I had, and that is for a good marriage, and I have never been disappointed. I'll take this over everything else. Little did I realize that this young 17-year-old that I met, that I had to wait till she got out of high school, that I waited so patiently for back in the 70s, would become my soulmate, my trooper, my ally, that would have my back 1,000 times and believe in me when there was nothing left to believe in. I want to share a few challenges to us, to you this morning, as I conclude this morning. I have seen some of my peers, men that I grew up with. These are men within, give or take, 2 to 5 years of my age. I have seen some of these men grow up in my era in the 60s and 70s that did become very successful. I mean, they became very successful businessmen. Some of them, in spite of the land crash and everything, the farming economy, they somehow were able to kind of float their way through, and today they're doing very, very well. They become very successful in their investments and things. And that's where they are today. But I would give very little for some of those marriages. In fact, I would give almost nothing for it. For some of them, these are men that I grew up with, that I know. Some of their wives are very lonely today. Some of them have been forced to become very independent. And in my opinion, independence is a cuss word in a marriage. It shouldn't be. I realize it's not the same for everyone. But independence just doesn't fit for some of these men. They're no longer with their companions today, not because of death either, for whatever reason. I'm going to say to you young men this morning, please hear me. The value of your finances and your business and the success of your and the passion that is driving you to do what you're doing today to make a living, that's not all bad. But I want to remind you that the value of those things will never hold a candle to the person that's sitting beside you today. Don't ever forget it. You can lose your business. You can lose your finances. You can walk day after day wondering how your bills are going to get paid. It's a road that some of you have been on too. But if you lose your companion, you've lost everything. I'm happily where I am today. I don't care about those other things. My question and challenge to you as a young man is, where do you want to be at the end of the road? At 68 years old, I can't redo any of those things. I'm probably a bit too old to be thinking about some new adventures and endeavors and businesses to start. But what do you want to see when you're in my shoes? And I want to promise you that time's going to come quicker than you think. Yes, it will. They say time goes fast when you're having fun, when you're enjoying your life. I'm a wealthy man today. I really am. It's not because of finances or investments or properties, bank account. I'm a wealthy man today because I have a wife, 4 children, and 9 grandchildren that would defend me for anything. That's why I'm wealthy today. And I give God the glory for that. I do. This is not just about me. In relation to what I shared here in the last few moments, I don't want to leave the idea we had a bad life. We had a lot of good times. We did fun things with our children. Sometimes we felt like we couldn't even afford to do it, but we did it anyway. We did travels, vacations, maybe not a lot, but we did it. We went to Canada a couple times, did some fishing up there. I had 2 different pastor friends up there, and they took me and the boys fishing. Those are good memories. One of my sons still talks about the walleye we caught on one of those trips. Some of those highlights are also, we attended quite a few trappers conventions. They're just kind of like a farm progress show, but it's about trapping. You know, and we would go and we'd tent. It was in the summer. Our children just loved it. And then in the fall of the year, on a frosty November morning, we would get up at 4:30 in the morning, and about 4 or 5, and I think toward the end, there were 6 of us would jump into this little club cab truck, and we'd go check traps. It wasn't all bad stuff. We had good times, too. Yes, we did. Another highlight is some of my ministry. Penn Valley. I think we brought our children here probably 8 times for the adoption seminar. They made connections here. We also had some good times. I want to close with an appeal to you as fathers, young husbands, young dads, those of you that aren't fathers yet, but probably will be. If I was able to turn back the clock of time and change one thing, I would not ask for anything that I was pursuing that I didn't get. Just one thing I would change, and that is my schedule when my children were little. Men, I want you to hear me. You've got one chance, one opportunity. I can't turn that clock back and go back and do it over again. Even though my son came to me already and saying, "You did the best you could, the one that gave us the hardest time." He said, "I made my own choices. It wasn't your fault." But sometimes I feel it was. I was at a funeral a week ago yesterday. He was a first cousin of my father, also a bond trigger. Not from our congregation. Last year I reached out to him. He was not doing well in his health. Of course, my dad's been gone for 11 years. So I visit him quite often and made some connections there. Being at the funeral a week ago yesterday, his son, now 60 years old, I simply share this to make my point. He's now 60 years old. He gave a pretty lengthy tribute. And he just said, "My dad was a farmer, but he was a father first." Anyways, this is what he said. He said, "One day I was out there throwing the ball. He didn't have anybody to play with, so he'd just throw the ball up against one of the buildings and it would come back to him." I think it's probably something a lot of us have done already when we were young. And his dad was hauling manure, just going through the driveway, just probably 20 yards away from him there. You know, he was going back and forth hauling manure. He's a busy man that day. He said about mid-forenoon, or forget when, what time of the day it was, he said his dad stopped the tractor, and he heard he turned it off. He looked over there, and his dad walked over to him, and he said, "Give me that ball." For about 30 minutes, he played with him. You know, the point he was making was, that manure hauling could wait. It didn't have to happen right now. You know, as I think about that, what a testimony. Again, to you dads here, the fun things, the quality time, this applies to your wife as well, especially to your children. The fun things, the quote, quality time that we spend with our children, with your children, will not completely ever compensate for too much absence. I know it won't. Don't console yourself too much about the quality time, but they need your presence as much as possible. And I will be the first one to admit that times have changed today. There are demands, there are places to go, there are things, everything's expensive. I understand, I get it. But don't neglect those little ones that are walking in your shadow, 2 to 4, 6, 8 years old, absolutely adoring every step you make as a dad. There's only one moment that they're going to be that way. And when they're about 12 to 14 or 16, they're going to start thinking for themselves. Have you laid that foundation? You're going to want them to come back to you and say, Dad, what do you think about this? It's only by the grace of God that my sons do that today. Feel a little undeserving of it. You need to lay that groundwork. You have one chance. Don't take the risk. Those little ones, and as well as your wife, need not only some quality time, but they need you. They need you to be there, if at all possible. Let's bow our heads for prayer.